This is Radio Boston. I'm Deborah Becker. Well, the end of the week means it's time for our Friday Week in Review. The story in Boston news this week, General Electric. On Wednesday, the company announced it would be moving its global headquarters from Fairfield, Connecticut to Boston, bringing with it about 800 jobs. Governor Baker told WBUR's Morning Edition that the move puts Boston on the map as a center for innovation.
The message is that Boston and Massachusetts is a very good place to be, a great place to be for the next generation. And I would expect a lot of folks will take a look at us who might not have looked before because of this.
Cities like New York and Providence were also vying for GE, but the company cited Boston's universities and startup culture as major reasons why it chose to locate here. And a state and city incentives package valued at some $150 million helped as well. But not everyone agrees with that package and whether it's worth it, including State Senator Jamie Eldridge.
And we've got a MBTA transportation system that is still pretty broken, cuts to local aid. We have a lot of small businesses that could benefit from support, and yet we're giving a tax break to arguably one of the most profitable companies in the world, not to mention this company is quite notorious for not paying any taxes at all, including in Massachusetts.
We'll talk about the GE decision and some other issues in the news with our Week in Review panel. Jim Sturgis is with us. He's executive director of the Pioneer Institute. Welcome.
Good to be with you.
Also, John Carroll, professor of communication at Boston University and a WBUR senior analyst. Welcome to you as well.
Good to be here.
So let's talk about GE. Yes, we are going to talk about it again, but I think it's going to be in the news for quite some time. But really, I think it is a really big issue here. It says a lot on a lot of different levels. So first, let's get initial reactions to the move. Jim, your thoughts?
Well, we are learning more by the day about what's in that package. And what I would say is that Charlie Baker and what he said on the clip before is wrong in the sense that we are already an innovation hub. And I greatly believe that GE needed Boston as much as Boston needed GE. Look, the fact is they were the tip of the spear in many, many sectors. And, you know, they've got a lot of competition out there, and they want to brand themselves in a place that's called the Innovation District. They want to be near Harvard. They want to be near MIT. They've got a great workforce here. It's a great educational system. So I would say that we give them as much as they give us, and I do think they do give us quite a lot. I mean, there's lots of supplier companies that come with them. There's great branding. There's lots more international representatives of companies who'll be here. So all in all, it is a very good thing for the city. And the question's really about the package. Is the package the right package?
Right. Is it worth it? Well, we'll talk about that in just a minute. John, I want to hear from you first. What do you think about this move?
Well, it's nice to see a corporate headquarters moving in instead of moving out, which is what Boston's experienced most of in the past decade or so. So I think from that standpoint, it's good. It's a huge company. It's got a $312 billion market cap. It's got 360,000 workers overall. So 800 that are going to come here doesn't seem like a really big number. But I think that symbolically, this is a good win for Boston. New York put on a big push to get GE to move back there. They had moved out in, I think, 74. Connecticut made a little less compelling a case for them to stay in Connecticut. But I think there were things about Massachusetts that made it a more appealing to GE, especially the sort of the tax burden here. New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, 1, 2, 3 in tax burdens. Massachusetts is 11. So I think that's a marginal difference that makes a difference for GE.
You know, you talk about it's good news to have somebody coming in as opposed to moving out. And I think that many folks say is the real big boom here for this area is that somebody's coming in, they're looking at our Seaport District, they're saying, isn't this great? We want to be with these universities and whatnot. And so it seems like the psychological effect of this may be what the state is banking on here and what the city is banking on. Let's listen to what Marty Walsh had to say about this on Wednesday afternoon after the news came out about GE.
For two decades, we've had companies move out of our city, and now we have people moving into our city, and I think that's a big win.
And we hear this over and over again, but I'm wondering, Jim, do we know from previous history at all whether the fact that a large corporation, a GE, a Fortune 100 company, coming into an area really does do more and give a place a psychological boost or maybe a hint of prestige that it may not have had before?
Well, I'm sure that everybody in the financial district, and especially in the Seaport district, felt that they were an inch taller after the deal was announced. All of a sudden, they were, you know, masters of the universe.
But do they shrink?
Yeah. Well, here's my take on this. Marty Walsh is wrong. Novartis has come here. Lots of companies have been coming here for well over a decade. This is a great place to do business. So what is different here and what is great about having GE here is the fact that they are a top 10 company, global company. With that comes a huge supply chain. There'll be lots of representative offices that will open up. It will do a lot for the city that's different from, let's say, even more than what happened with Liberty Mutual. And Liberty Mutual, a Boston-based insurer and a giant insurer, decide to expand by 600 jobs. They get $40 million from the city of Boston.
For 600 jobs.
For 600 jobs over 20 years. Now, in this case, you get a global top 10 company with lots of trailer effects, if you will, and you get it for $25 million as a city. And you have the incentives coming from the state that are largely infrastructure incentives, which is the best way to do it rather than taking a stake in the company or investing somehow in the company. So it's not a bad way to do it. And I would say that just to build on what John was saying a second ago, Connecticut was offering a lot more. And New York was offering a lot more. New York was going to offer state-owned land in New York City, which is extremely expensive, plus other things. We won on fundamentals. This is a great place to do business, and that is, I think, the thing that we should take away from this. Unfortunately, we've gotten to the place in this country and where big companies expect a check to play, right? And if we could get the federal government to actually write a law that would make that not possible, I think we'd all be better off.
So it was some fundamentals, but it was also some incentives and some big incentives. We're talking almost $150 million. So let's talk about that right now. You know, Governor Baker was actually asked about these incentives on CNBC this week, and this is what he had to say about it.
What we're really trying to do here is create a transaction and a transition. The decision GE made here, this is where, keep in mind, they were in Connecticut for 40 years. So this is, this is going to be a long-term play for them, and I believe for us as well.
And so, John, I'm wondering, do we, you know, how can we say for sure that anything is really a good long-term play for the state of Massachusetts?
Well, you can't, but you figure if they're going to spend the kind of money they're going to spend to come here, they'd probably be reluctant to pick up and leave anytime in the immediate future. The irony here is that GE is the last company that needs incentives. They are so rich and they pay so little tax. Last year, they had $5.8 billion in U.S. Pre-tax profit. They paid less than 1% in federal taxes. They paid zero in state taxes. They have offloaded their profits to other countries that have lower tax rates, and they're masters at dodging taxes. So, you know, this is really coals to Newcastle when you start offering them tax benefits. That's one thing. And there are other issues, too. I mean, one issue is GE is in a battle with the EPA over a cleanup in Pittsfield that essentially they've been stalling on and refusing to do what they had agreed to do in terms of cleaning up PCBs. The Baker administration said nothing about that during this big announcement. And the other element is the International Business Times brought up today that the Republican Governors Association, which backed Charlie Baker last year in his 2014 in his campaign, they got $240,000 from General Electric to use for running ads. So there are a lot of complications here that are sort of under the surface, under the radar, that I think will come out over time, which will make this look a little bit different from the sort of rosy glow that it has now.
Ouch. You know, we did hear from Senator Jamie Eldridge in the beginning and saying, we've got huge problems. We've got MBTA infrastructure issues and things like that. And while some of this package will go toward infrastructure improvements, why aren't we using some of this money for really helping things that need to be fixed financially first before we do this, with no guarantee that this is going to yield anything? And Jim, you know about some of the history of governors offering incentives to other companies. Remind us of that, and what do you say to that?
Well, look, in the case of, let's say, the Patriots, when the Patriots were thinking of relocating, they were thinking of going to Hartford, Providence. They shopped themselves around, just like GE was doing. And they got $70 million for infrastructure in Foxborough. That's the sort of thing that we've seen, I think, repeatedly in the state, where the legislature and the governor's office, whoever's in office, always wants to go the route of infrastructure. So in terms of this being an infrastructure investment, it's not outsized. Again, It is problematic given the history of this company. What I would say, there's an implicit promise somewhere along the line, I would think, in making this deal. If you are GE and you're going to the Seaport District and you all of a sudden you see all that traffic outside your door and it's impossible to get your workforce in, if you see the MBTA in the state that it's in and somehow we're peddling ourselves as a world-class city, my guess is there's going to be a lot of pressure exerted also from that front to actually upgrade things. So Jamie Eldridge's point is, I think, very well made.
I also want to ask about Senator Warren, who has brought up some of the criticism before about GE. Of course, she's spoken about GE and mentioned them by name. We actually have a piece of tape from her 2012 campaign ad. And although she said, we should say, that she has issued a statement saying Boston is a great fit for GE, which, you know, is a bit tepid by most measures. It's a bit tepid at best in terms of an endorsement of the company locating to Boston. But this is what she said in her 2012 campaign ad. Let's listen.
Today, Washington lets big corporations like GE pay nothing, zero in taxes, while kids are left drowning in debt to get an education. This isn't about economics. It's about our values.
Okay, so that's Elizabeth Warren, who is now the senator representing GE's global headquarters that will be locating in Boston. John Carroll, how do you think this is going to play itself out?
Well, maybe about values, but it's also about politics. Mm-hmm. And I think that that Senator Warren is in a difficult position. She doesn't want to be the skunk at the garden party right now. And I think that that one of the reasons that she issued a statement at all was because that's the kind of thing that you do in these situations. But she certainly wasn't really laying out the welcome mat for GE. It was very terse. It was very sort of noncommittal. It was more about Boston than GE. And I think that she's going to probably go back to her more aggressive stance when the dust settles here, because I think that that's the biggest problem of all, is what GE does on a corporate level. And I think that that once the sort of the afterglow is over, I think a lot of people are going to hear from Elizabeth Warren that that we need, now we have a vested interest in cracking down on GE and extracting more tax dollars from them, if that's even possible.
And you don't think we'll see any change in her criticism or the level of her criticism?
I would be surprised if we did. I think, you know, this is a ceremonial time, so you sort of do the things that people do.
You don't say something bad at the funeral.
But, you know, you let a decent interval go by, and then all of a sudden it's back to business as usual, because GE will be back to business as usual, and they'll be doing the same kinds of things to Massachusetts they've done to other states.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on to opioids. Opioid legislation passed by the House this week. Now, it would limit new opioid prescriptions to 7 days. Amid this opioid epidemic that we have here in Massachusetts. But what's controversial really here is requiring doctors to give overdose patients a substance use evaluation within 24 hours. Now, this is softer from what Governor Baker had initially proposed. He wanted a 3-day limit on new prescriptions, and he also wanted the ability to involuntarily hold overdose patients for up to 72 hours. And even when folks started criticizing that plan from the governor, he stuck by it. So we heard a lot of debate in the House about this 72-hour proposal. We have some tape here from Assistant Minority Leader State Representative Brad Hill, who said the 24 hours before there would be an initial substance use evaluation just isn't enough. Let's listen.
What we need to do is get these individuals the help they deserve. By going into an emergency room, getting Narcan and sent right out the door, that's not helping.
And then we also heard from Democratic State Representative Jeff Sanchez, who said that holding patients involuntarily could keep them away from hospitals in the future.
And imagine, this person that gets held back once will probably go back to the emergency room. And we want to make sure that the emergency rooms themselves, they're always seen by anyone who comes in as a place of healing.
Now, House Speaker DeLeo and officials from several hospitals raised concerns about resources and whether there were enough beds to hold people for 72 hours. Governor Baker's a former healthcare official, so he's in an interesting place here, I think. Jim, what do you think about this legislation and about what might happen from here, given the governor's background and given this level of debate about this 72-hour issue?
Look, I think when the proposal for the 72-hour hold was first made, it was recognized by everybody, including the governor, that it was highly controversial. controversial. You're actually taking away an individual's freedom, freedom to move, and that's a big, big deal. But I think what he was trying to do with the proposal was to put something out there that would allow them to get something out of it. I'm quite sure he will sign any bill that comes out of the conference committee because the Senate already passed its bill. The House just passed theirs. Let me say something a little controversial. I think what we've seen is the clout of the doctor's profession, where they do not like to have people tell them how much they can prescribe when they can prescribe. Now, I understand that both Sanchez and Hill make some very, very good points, especially Sanchez in terms of your emergency room is sort of like a sanctuary where you can go and you should feel like you can go there anytime. That said, if you look at the data around how quickly people go back out and get another fix, 24 hours probably doesn't do the job. This is a free society where we compromise on all kinds of things. We'll see if this makes allows us to make progress. But it may not be enough to stem the tide. This is actually an emergency, and I think the governor is trying to express something around that. I didn't think from the beginning that 72-hour hold would win the day. It just—it's too hard of a proposal.
But I think we do that now in the case of mental health issues. If someone's a danger to themselves or others, they can be held for 72 hours involuntarily. So I think the governor just wanted it to include substance use as well. But one thing to me that was interesting about the power of doctors, as you say, is that the doctors and the governor was only asking for 3 days initially. And many of the insurance companies now have actually put limits on new opioid prescriptions as well. So I think the doctors group is changing a bit and realizes that for this particular instance, there may have to be compromise. Wouldn't you say, John?
Well, there is compromise. Mm. So instead of a 3-day limit on opioid prescriptions, there's a 7-day
limit.
Right. So that's some progress. This whole thing feels to me like a sort of a front of the house rehab, where the sort of the entry points are being adjusted in terms of how addicts are being treated. But I don't feel like it gets much past that. It changes some of the mechanics of it, but it doesn't really change the fundamental dynamics that are going on in the state. And I think that's the harder thing to do. So, you know, you can figure out emergency rooms can probably absorb what they'll be absorbing here, and the 24-hour evaluation is probably a good thing overall, but I don't think it really gets much below the surface. And I think that it's a good move. It's better to do it than not to do it. But I think that this is just one small part of something that is a much bigger problem that is going to require more than tinkering with regulations. It's going to require resources. It's going to require money, and that's what I'm not seeing so far in the discussion.
Mm. Finally, what a segue! This week, 8 Massachusetts senators visited Colorado, right, on a fact-finding mission to learn about recreational marijuana. Massachusetts voters may take this up and decide to approve this later this year. We were actually there. WBUR Steve Brown went on this trip to Colorado to talk with lawmakers about what was going on there. And here is State Senator Linda Dorsina-Forey. And she said, you know, lawmakers have a lot to think about regarding the lessons from Colorado.
Some of the issues that they face, right, although it's been successful, but there are some roadblocks, right, and some issues that maybe they can't tackle. So I do think that if the voters of Massachusetts supports adult use marijuana, but how do we regulate it? And how do we make sure that there's not one opening up on every corner? I think that's important.
And that is State Senator Linda Dorsina-Forey. She was among those in Colorado this week looking at their experience with the recreational use of marijuana. Do you think that this is going to be a huge issue this year, Jim?
Yes, I do.
Yes.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. Absolutely, I do. Look, the thing that always gives me a lot of heart, I think it's great that they went there to study it in person, because data is data, but when you actually look people in the eye, you get to talk to a local police officer, you get to look in the eye of the people who are actually working in these dispensaries. You get to learn a lot. So, you know, Colorado and 3 other states actually have recreational use currently. And we ought to look at all 4 of those states and see what they've done, what's working and what isn't working. Because if the voters decide to move forward with this, there are lots of thorny questions around modeling behavior for young people, locations of dispensaries. You know, there's anecdotal evidence around driver impairment and that sort of thing. That's why the police don't like it that much. It's anecdotal at best. I mean, there are lots of questions around synthetic, high-powered cannabis that's that we really need to look at. So we need to get our game on if the voters decide to move forward with this.
Synthetic, though, is a little bit different than what this what I think would happen in this particular case. What do you think, John?
Well, I'm not sure that the Massachusetts lawmakers covered themselves in glory on this trip. I'll read you the headline from High Times, which I do not have a subscription to, by the way. It is, Massachusetts Senator shows he is clueless about marijuana during Colorado visit. And I think that some of the questions they asked were a bit naive and clueless. They're taking selfies in pot shops. There were a lot of elements about this that I thought were a little bit unseemly. But one of the issues that you find in Colorado is a lot of conflicting information about what kind of health issues this has raised, what kind of money it's raised. There have been estimates from $70 million to $125 million that I've seen. There are issues around kids. And there's this other issue that's been raised here in Massachusetts, which is, if we're so concerned about the opioid crisis, why are we legalizing marijuana, which one Colorado study said, was a gateway drug for a number of young adults out there. So all of those things are part of the mix. I think that there's a lot of issues to straighten out before people can move forward with any kind of confidence on this.
Right. That was actually a big criticism from Cape and Islands District Attorney Michael O'Keefe regarding whether the legalization will happen and what that might do. Well, we've got about 2.5 minutes. It gives us just enough time, I think, to do our hubbubs, those little stories that may not have made it to the top of the newscast, but they did catch our attention. Jim, what's your hubbub this week?
Well, this week the Globe ran a great story on area historians who were doing some fantastic sleuthing and identified Proctor's Ledge, the exact location where 19 alleged witches were put to death 323 years ago. I get why the Salem mayor actually made this a big deal and wants to put up a memorial. I'm sure it will attract a lot of people during Halloween, but I have a pet peeve, which is that friends across that great Atlantic pond actually called me and said, I saw an article about this, and it aggravates the heck out of me that people always associate Salem with a witch trial. There was one witch trial, 19 people died. It's horrible. In Europe, there were tens and tens of thousands of supposed witches who were put to death, and yet we always get tagged with this. Mm-hmm. Salem's a great city. Shouldn't just be tagged with witches.
All right. Defend Salem.
They need a rebranding campaign, right?
When they have the bewitched statue in the center.
Which certainly helps.
Okay. John, how about you? What's your hubbub this week?
So mine started in a piece in the Wall Street Journal this week talking about how everybody's complaining about being on Eastern Standard Time because it's so depressing. And they had a little map that said 21 states are considering some kind of legislation around daylight savings time. And Massachusetts was one. So I went and checked out. There is legislation that has been proposed to study the possibility of moving Massachusetts to Atlantic time, which is one time zone over, which would, in effect, make daylight savings time a year-round condition rather than one that comes up and then disappears. The legislation has stalled out in committee, I gather. I looked at the time zone report. They said they think it's still in committee. It would be good to find out. I'm not sure if it's there because State House employees want to get home before dark. But anyway, there is some hope that we could actually get out of the dark and onto daylight savings time all year round.
Oh my gosh, it's January and you're already dreaming of this. Okay.
Absolutely.
John Carroll, professor of communication at Boston University and a WBUR senior analyst. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Also, Jim Sturgis, executive director of the Pioneer Institute. Thank you very much.
Good to be with you. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too. Stay with us. There's more ahead. I'm Deborah Becker. This is Radio Boston.